From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. We have some important updates to share today, including what the status is of our Nebraska legislature and pro-life LB 814 dealing with dismemberment abortion. We'll also talk about the World Health Organization declaring abortion an essential service and what you need to know about Nebraska's upcoming May primary election. But first, we hope everyone is staying safe and healthy right now amidst the ongoing coronavirus crisis. And we want to make sure that you know Nebraska Family Alliance has published a resource page on our website specific to the coronavirus where you can find information and resources for churches, nonprofits, small businesses, and families. There's things like educational tools and resources, answer to legal questions, and more. Also included is a downloadable serve and pray guide with prayer points so you can partner with us in continuing to pray for our state and nation, as well as opportunities to serve your neighbors and communities. If that is helpful to you, you can find, read, and download all of it for free at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Last week on Thursday was what was supposed to be the last day of this year's legislative session. It marked day 60, except the state legislature remains on an extended recess as they are indefinitely postponed due to the coronavirus outbreak. And so we wanted to share, in light of that, what the status is of our state legislature, what we can expect next, what we know, what we don't know, and also what that means for LB 814, which would prohibit dismemberment abortion in Nebraska, a major, extremely important pro-life bill that we have talked a lot about on this program. And so we want to give an update because a lot of people have questions right now, and we want to make sure people know what's going on or not going on from our state capitol. So what we know is that the Nebraska legislature is planning to reconvene to finish their legislative session. And essentially what they've done is hit the pause button. So they hit pause and they will pick up right where they left off when they reconvene. What we don't know is when that will be. We're not sure when that might happen, but we do know that the legislature is fully intending to reconvene at a later date this year to finish the remainder of the session. So they will get to pick up on day 44 of their legislative session. This is a 60-day working session, so they'll have 17 days left is all for the remainder of the session. And when they do get to reconvene as a full legislature inside the state capitol, likely they'll start with budget adjustment bills. And the speaker of the legislature, Jim Scheer, has come out and said that things likely will look different when the legislature is able to start meeting again. And that's important because when we left off, a poll motion had just been filed for LB 814, which again is a pro-life bill that would prohibit the practice of dismembering a living preborn child in the womb. That's a procedure that is used in the second trimester when the baby is too large to be removed in one piece. And so this is a bill that attracted a lot of attention and actually has 25 co-sponsors out of 49 state senators. But despite broad support for a common sense policy, it remained deadlocked in our state's Judiciary Committee, where the bill was assigned, where it sat for weeks. And so finally, a poll motion was able to be filed, which means that the full legislature can vote to pull the bill out of committee so it can then be debated and voted on by the full legislature. And so with only 17 working days left, that is a really tight window for a bill to start and be able to make it through the legislative process. In Nebraska, a bill has to go through three rounds of voting before it can be signed into law. So it is possible, but it's an uphill climb, and it's going to continue to take a lot of support and prayer and advocacy for that to happen. But that is a top priority for us, and we're going to continue to do everything we can to make sure that that bill has the opportunity to be debated and voted on and signed into law this year. So that's where things are at right now. A lot is still up in the air. We don't know exactly what things will look like or when the legislature will get to start meeting again inside the state capitol. But we do anticipate that later this year, the legislature will reconvene for 17 days to finish the 2020 legislative session. And in the meantime, we are continuing to fight to advance the cause of life. And there has been so much tragedy and heartbreak across the country and across the world right now due to this ongoing pandemic. And one of the really unfortunate and sad things that we've seen take place is abortion leaders seeking to exploit this pandemic in order to advance self-managed and telehealth abortions. And this, unfortunately, includes, but perhaps not surprisingly, the World Health Organization, who came out and declared abortion as an essential service. As part of their COVID-19 response, the World Health Organization has declared abortion as an essential service. And remember, until very recently, when the Trump administration took some very bold and decisive action in saying that they would no longer provide funding to the World Health Organization, the United States was the leading funder of the World Health Organization, who have declared abortion as an essential service. According to Family Research Council in the United Kingdom, they have now issued a temporary approval for chemical abortions to be completely done at home. And here in the United States, the abortion lobby continues to call for the FDA to lift restrictions off the abortion pill, making way for complete self-managed abortions. Unfortunately, this is what the abortion industry all over the world has pursued even before the current pandemic, for abortions to be unrestricted, unregulated, and do it yourself. The abortion pill is a two-drug regimen that essentially, in large part, is a do-it-yourself method at home anyway, but typically, the woman would at least have some type of interaction with a physician by taking the first pill, mifepristone, under their supervision at the clinic before going home and taking the second pill 24 to 48 hours later. So unfortunately, long gone are the days of abortion activists calling for abortions to be safe, legal, and rare. By placing the burden of inducing abortions completely on women, despite the fact that there can be numerous and serious health complications that often result from an induced chemical abortion, it is evident that the abortion industry has no regard for human dignity whatsoever, certainly not for the child in the womb, but neither for the mother. The restrictions currently in place on the abortion pill and mifepristone are there to protect the health and safety of women. And that brings us to an interesting discussion about the future of abortion, because the abortion industry has favored dispensing abortion pills due to how easy they are to distribute and their ability to lower overhead costs of in-clinic surgical abortions. Chemical abortions is a way to shift costs and patient oversight from the surgical provider to the patient herself. Thus, it's not surprising that world leaders like Planned Parenthood have already made extensive use of medication or medical abortions, a shift that has now been supported by the World Health Organization. According to the Guttmacher Institute, the abortion industry views this drug-based method as the future of abortion. And now they are making calls to remove all restrictions so that these medication abortions can just be sent to women through the mail without ever going into a clinic or having to visit or speak to a physician. Currently, this method of medication abortion has only been approved for the first trimester. But now we also know that the abortion industry is actively working to expand telemedicine activities and are currently experimenting on women including in Mexico and in Vietnam, to perform medication abortions in the second trimester. This is especially alarming because the risks of life-threatening and health-endangering complications only increase as the gestational age of the pregnancy progresses. This is what's happening right now during this global pandemic. While people and entire countries are going to great lengths, extreme lengths, to do everything possible to save human lives, we see the abortion lobby continuing to try to push the envelope to take human lives. And it should also be noted that what makes chemical abortions uniquely traumatic is that a mother sees and must dispose of the remains of her aborted child. There is serious psychological trauma to that, and that has been well documented. And right now, the abortion pill has been approved in the United States up to 10 weeks gestation, at which point the baby already has a head, hands, feet, fingers, and toes, as well as a beating heart. And so for a woman to have to take in a visual of a child that is halfway developed at 22 weeks is severely distressing, especially for someone who thought they were getting care from humanitarians. And instead, they walk away with more trauma and now are left to self-manage the abortion by themselves at home. The two most prevalent complications observed for chemical abortions are hemorrhaging and an incomplete abortion, which means that there needed to be surgical intervention to extract any remaining parts of the unborn child from the woman's uterus. Prolonged hemorrhaging can require blood transfusions, and it's already been reported to the FDA that over 500 blood transfusions and over 1,000 hospitalizations and 24 deaths have already taken place as a result of medication abortions. So I think it's important to remember that this isn't just about fighting for the lives of unborn children, which should be at the forefront of this discussion. But I think this is another reminder that it's the pro-life side. It's pro-lifers who really care about women and are advocating for women. Because in a 2015 peer-reviewed study, for example, to test the safety and feasibility of self-administered over-the-counter abortion pills, the study found that when women took the pills past 63 days gestation, 62% of participants had incomplete abortions resulting in surgical intervention, and nearly 13% required surgical evacuation with blood transfusions. And we want to send this out through the mail for more people to just do it at home by themselves. We need to be pushing back on this because telemedicine abortion trials are currently taking place in 13 states to test the viability of women self-managing abortions through mail-order abortion pills. And Planned Parenthood has also come out and announced plans to expand their telemed services to all 50 states, which would include pickups for contraceptives and abortion pills. Now, it should be noted that many states across the country have laws strictly prohibiting this from happening, including in Nebraska. But there was legislation introduced last year to strike out that language from state statute that prohibits telemedicine abortions. And now Planned Parenthood is announcing that they're going to try to push this through now in all 50 states across the country. Abortion activists routinely compare inducing a chemical abortion to taking Tylenol. But a chemical abortion involves heavy bleeding and carries life-threatening risks, not to mention expelling and ending the life of a preborn baby. So to just pretend for ideological reasons that chemical abortions can be done safely remotely or even as a do-it-yourself over-the-counter regimen is extremely dangerous and clearly not about protecting the best interests or the health and safety of women. Some more liberal-leaning states have also deemed abortion as an essential service. And in Michigan, Democrat Governor Gretchen Whitmer called abortion, quote, life-sustaining. Say that again slowly. Lila Rose, a pro-life advocate, responded on Twitter to Governor Whitner's comments saying, quote, "Those who argue that killing an innocent child is life-sustaining should be nowhere near the levers of power in any community, state, or nation." Fortunately, the U.S. currently has strong pro-life leadership from the top down, so at a national level, it is unlikely that we will see abortion declared as an essential service at a time like this. But clearly, this will not stop the abortion industry from taking advantage of the pandemic to ramp up progression to their desired future of total self-managed abortions. So in response to all of this, as well as the efforts of several pro-abortion attorneys generals who wrote to federal officials asking that they lift safeguards currently in place for the abortion pill, last month, NFA joined with other pro-life organizations from across the country to call on the Trump administration to prevent emergency funds from going to abortionists and to maintain existing safeguards around the abortion pill. And last week, we joined our friends from over 30 state-based family policy groups from across the country in sending a letter to federal officials in the Department of Human Services, as well as the Federal Drug Administration, that affirmed important safeguards to protect women and pushing back on the abortion lobby's attempt to remove pro-life protections. Over two-thirds of Americans continue to oppose taxpayer-funded abortions. And as world abortion leaders aggressively pursue abortion access at any cost, the United States is currently in a strong position to ensure that it is not a part of this agenda and that we will continue putting women and human dignity first, as we should. And this points us back to a simple fact that cannot be stated enough. Elections have consequences. That phrase has been thrown around quite a bit, but it's incredibly true. And it's especially true for the pro-life movement because the results of an election could mean literally life or death for preborn babies. From the president to state representatives and ballot initiatives, all these elections, no matter how small, hold significance in the fight for life. And here in Nebraska, our first opportunity to engage in the 2020 election is just around the corner, with our primary election taking place on May 12th, and early voting is already underway. So as a pro-life Christian in 2020, here are some things to consider as you approach the voting booth or are filling out your mail-in ballot. When it comes to the presidential election, whoever wins in November will have the opportunity either to continue pro-life initiatives or hinder pro-life efforts. And when voting for the leader of the free world, there are obviously many, many different things to consider and many different views and philosophies held by people in good faith. But certainly, the lives of preborn babies that are potentially hanging in the balance should also be in consideration. There is also much at stake in the United States Senate, where 34 senators are up for re-election. And in addition to the Senate races, the future leadership of the House of Representatives will also be critical. While most all of the focus in the media will be on the national elections, when it comes to pro-life legislation, local elections are incredibly important. For example, we talked about LB 814, a really important pro-life bill in the Nebraska legislature that, despite being introduced on the very first day and having 25 co-sponsors, has lingered and hasn't gone anywhere so far. We're going to try and push it through, but it's been really difficult. And we have to make sure that we are sending the right people down to our state capitol, and we need to know where candidates stand on these issues. That's why Nebraska Family Alliance publishes a voter guide every year, and you can view it at nebraskavoterguide.com. All governments, including ours, are established by God. Part of our form of government is the responsibility to elect our leaders. Every Christian citizen who lives in a democracy has a minimal obligation to be well-informed and to vote for candidates and policies that are most consistent with biblical principles. Our choices will always, always be between imperfect candidates. But if we want our communities, our state, and our nation to flourish as God does, we have to evaluate our choices carefully and seek to elect leaders whose policy positions are most consistent with biblical teaching. Voting also shows that we care about our neighbor, because the candidates we choose to elect and the policies that they choose to advance have a major impact in people's lives and in the church's ability to preach and live out the gospel freely. We sought to serve voters in making informed decisions, so we put out questions to candidates that people of faith would want to know, and then we let candidates answer themselves and put their positions on issues of importance into a voter guide at NebraskaVoterGuide.com. We also provide researched answers on candidates' positions who elect not to respond to surveys or who don't have as much of a track record on where they stand on some of these issues. And so you can see not only where candidates stand on the right to life and taxpayer funding of abortion, but also issues like religious freedom, judicial nominations, family values, and school choice. And the voter guide is also personalized to you. You can enter in your address and then you will get to see the specific candidates who will be on your ballot and how they compare on the issues side by side. You can see candidates for the state legislature, the state board of education, as well as candidates for the U.S. House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and president. And if you already know who you're voting for, or you know where candidates stand on the issues, you likely have at least some and probably a lot of people in your circle of influence who don't. And so this is a really important opportunity to get to share this resource with them so that they can make informed decisions as well. And it's especially crucial in Nebraska, being that our unicameral, our legislature, is nonpartisan. So when candidates' names for state legislature appear on a ballot, there is no R and no D next to their name. There's no party affiliation. And so this is a really important way to make sure that people know where these candidates stand, what they have said, how they have voted, and what their positions are on these issues that are so important to our state. So please be sure to visit NebraskaVoterGuide.com to view candidate positions and download your own personalized voter guide. Share it with your friends and family and make sure you vote in our primary election. We also hope that you will join Nebraska Family Alliance in continuing to pray for everyone impacted by the coronavirus, especially the vulnerable, our government leaders, medical professionals, families whose businesses, job stability, and schooling have been affected, and for the church to find ways to serve those in need and continue in proclaiming the good news of the gospel. That's all the time we have for this week. Be sure to visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org for more information and resources. Until next time, I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.